This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK5.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 97, Bones Playing with a Tribble. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Tristan Riddell. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including upcoming Chicago and Boston conventions, Bing's new Klingon option, a major UK Blu-ray bargain, the Star Trek Rivals card game for iOS, and Shatner's new Captain's Close-Up miniseries. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt, Matthew Rushing, and Laurie Sears to discuss Star Trek Into Darkness. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Tristan. It's nice to have you on the show with me for the first time to do news. How are you today?
Hello, Chris. I'm doing well. I'm excited. I feel like a green anchor about to perform his first day behind the desk on ABC News or something.
Well, I'll try not to hold up any cards, you know, with jokes, anything to mislead you. I'll try not to throw you off track like that. Because that's what they do in a real news studio, right? To the rookies.
Anything to make the rookie's life as horrible as possible. And that's exactly the kind of initiation that I got with Trek FM when I first came on. So I expect nothing less.
Of course. As our listeners know, you are no rookie. You are a host of To the Journey, and you have appeared many times on The Ready Room. But it's your first time doing news with me. So what's going on in Chicago these days?
You know, it's definitely windy. It lives up to the name, but thankfully we're finally coming into some real weather. Living in Northern Illinois, you definitely learn to appreciate the warm days when you get them, because actually it's kind of one extreme or the other. It's either bitter cold or roast an egg on a sidewalk hot. So it's nice that it's finally getting at least to somewhat normal temperatures.
That sounds good. I bet Char would be jealous of that, because I guess she's still been buried under snow for quite a while there.
She should be jealous because she made her choice on where she lives.
Well, it's good to hear things are warming up there. And while we're talking about Chicago, our first news story is related to your lovely city. And that's the fact that Creation is about to land there at the end of the month with a Star Trek convention.
Yes, it is. The lineup is crazy exciting. I mean, I went a couple years ago to this Creation Con that's actually held in the same hotel room in Rosemont, which is not far from me whatsoever, but they did not have anywhere near as cool people as they're going to have this year. They're going to have Patrick Stewart, Johnny Frakes, Spiner, Surtees, Dorn, Burton, McFadden. I mean, and not only just next-gen people, they're going to have Avery Brooks, Nana, Renee, Jeffrey, Casey. I'm excited just reading the names out loud.
I'm glad Jeffrey Combs is going to be there, because it just wouldn't be a Star Trek convention or a Star Trek anything without him.
He is everywhere.
Well, with as a diversified individual as Jeffrey Combs is, whenever you have any kind of Star Trek convention, and even sci-fi convention, you got to have the Combs. And thankfully, he was at the one that I went to a couple years ago, and he was fantastic. He performed Romeo and Juliet with Casey Biggs, and he was Juliet, and he even put on a skirt and everything. It was amazing. It was sublime.
Well, you know, Jeffrey can pull off any character. You know, I find myself, as a result of his work on Star Trek, I find myself, like, every show I watch, it doesn't matter what the show is, I'm always trying to figure out if one of the characters is Jeffrey Combs.
You never know. You always have to be on your toes when you watch TV. Like, the killer, it was Jeffrey Combs.
Exactly. Now, one thing is missing here, and I don't think I've ever seen a listing for a Star Trek convention with this missing before, but I don't see Chase Masterson's name on here anywhere.
Oh, yeah, she's in everything.
She's at every convention, for sure.
That's what I meant. I mean, she always has a booth. Wherever there's a Star Trek convention, there's a Chase Masterson booth.
I remember going to the official 30th anniversary, I believe it was, Star Trek convention in Huntsville, Alabama back in 96. And she was there then too. So I just, this may be the first time, if she's really not going to be there, it may be the first time ever that there's been a Star Trek convention in the modern age without Chase Masterson.
And without those incredibly inappropriate photos that she brings for herself to sign. My goodness, it's like she's draped in the American flag wearing nothing else.
I have seen those.
Yes. My goodness. I was a little shocked. I was just walking by and I was like, oh my goodness, who would bring those photos? And then I look up. Oh, it's Chase Masterson herself. Oh, you got to make a living though.
Well, yeah, you have to. Well, also at this convention, now this is, and it's hard for me to believe this as well, this is the 20th anniversary year of Deep Space Nine. And to celebrate that, as well as to talk about Space Seed and the Wrath of Khan, friend of the show, John Tenuto, is going to be there, and he's going to be presenting three unique discussions. Now, you were telling me on the other side of the room that you have actually gotten to meet John in person because you attended one of his sessions.
I did. He knows his stuff and he's entertaining while he does it. If you guys have the option of seeing him speak or seeing his collectibles or his photo collection, just his sheer knowledge of behind the scenes activity is amazing, especially when it comes to Khan, Noonien, and Singh material. And when I went, he spoke near my town and at a local library, and I thought no one would show up. I thought it would just be me. But I was dead wrong. The room was packed. And he brought in his collectibles and, like, you know, figurines. He even gave away some figurines as a raffle. And sadly, I did not win. But I had my heart set on the Deanna Will Riker twin set, but I didn't get it. So, but no, like, he's a great guy.
Action figure set?
Action figure set, yeah. Yeah, they're like...
Will and Troy?
It was like 10-inch figurines in cloth uniforms, and they were in a double set together, and I'd never seen it before, and I wanted it real bad. So if next time you talk to John, you tell him he owes me a figurine
he owes
set.
You that. I can only imagine what some people might do with that set of figurines. You know, some of those fans on Twitter, I don't know.
Well, I know what I would
what
do.
What they might do with those.
And that would be... steamy scenes of interaction on the Titan. And by steamy, I mean battle scenes. I don't know what you were thinking, but...
Well, I know you love Tumblr, and so my mind was going all over the place
every time
when I think about what people would post there.
Okay, for some reason, whenever Tumblr comes up in conversation, it doesn't come up that often. But like I'll say, like, oh yeah, I have a Tumblr, and people look at me like, really? Like, out of all the people, I would never guess you had a Tumblr. I mean, what do you put on it? Like, dominatrix stuff? Or, like gross fan fiction? Like, ew, no, I put, like, funny GIFs and screenshots and jokes and stuff. Why? And it's just, people always assume I'm some sort of deviant because I have a Tumblr.
At any rate, definitely, if you're in the Chicago area, check this out. May 31st through June 2nd at the Westin O'Hare Hotel in Rosemont. Check out John's presentations, which I know will be fantastic. And if you're not in the Chicago area, June 8th and 9th at the Heinz Convention Center in Boston, those of you on the East Coast up in the New England area will have a chance to see many of the same guests, as well as a TNG reunion performance where the cast of TNG is going to be taking the stage together. And it's actually going to be hosted in Boston by William Shatner.
Not only do you get a TNG reunion, but it's hosted by the man himself, William Shatner.
You know, I thought they were all going to go over together in a caravan of mopeds with a Starfleet insignia on the sides.
Now, that's the kind of moped I would drive. Now, I would not be ashamed to drive a moped if it was adorned with a Starfleet insignia, whether I was in Rome or not.
And you had a personalized license plate on the back with some sort of Star Trek reference.
A friend of mine just got his To Boldly Go license plate in the mail, and he's super excited about it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That would be cool. I wish we had personalized plates in Japan, but we don't. So I can't do anything fun with mine.
Oh, that's boring.
Even though I have a Nissan Cube, and I have seen, I don't think they sell those in the U.S., I'm not sure, but I believe they do sell them in Canada because I've seen a photo of someone with one. And, of course, they did have Borg on their license plate.
Nice.
So they are driving their Borg cube.
Yes. No, they do. They do sell them. They're not very popular here, but they do sell that.
Okay. They're really popular here. Very, very popular.
No, we like things big in America. It's got to be yeah. a six-cylinder SUV. Nothing else.
See, for here, the cube is kind of big. Anyway, yeah, Boston, June 8th and 9th. And the session that we're talking about with William Shatner in the TNG cast is a special 90-minute performance that does require a separate ticket. So just to let you know, it's not included in any of the ticket packages. So if you do get the packages for the Boston Con and you want to see this TNG reunion performance, you will need to grab an additional ticket. And we'll put links in the show notes to that so you can get more information on both of these conventions.
Wait, you're trying to tell me that Creation, the company Creation, is making a separate package for a special event? You mean there's no way to combine it? I mean, it's not a freebie?
It's not. I know it's shocking.
I don't believe that. So everybody do your research. Don't believe this, man, because that does not sound like the company I know and love, Creation Entertainment.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't quite sound like them, does it? I think you've been spending too much time in that alternate timeline, Tristan. Right?
Yeah, it's,
that will come.
That's the later JJ in the show. Creation Entertainment. Everything's different after the Kelvin. So. Everything's different, even Creation Entertainment.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, well, let's move on to our next story. And for those of you who have a little warrior streak in your blood and you want to speak Klingon, but you know you haven't quite learned enough Klingon yet to converse, Microsoft and their search engine Bing has joined forces actually with Paramount and the Klingon Language Institute to bring an officially licensed Klingon option to their translation feature.
Not only does the universe we live in have a Klingon Language Institute, not only is that a real thing, but it's now being integrated into our own technology. There's no better time to be alive, folks. This is just fantastic. And this operates within the Windows Phone as well as it being web-based. And I'm really impressed by the Windows Phone. I don't have one personally, but I would definitely think about it when my contract is up, because it has that special feature where you take your camera and you can scan or take a picture of what you want translated, and it'll translate it there instantly for you. That's just mind-blowing to me, to the fact that we are that much closer to a real universal translator.
Yeah, it is. Now, Bing can do 41 languages, and I believe including Klingon, that makes it 42, mm-hmm. because it says it can translate between Klingon and 41 languages. Now, I have seen before, and I haven't tried it myself, but I've seen an app for iOS, and I believe I saw it being used on an iPad, where they would hold it up to French, and it would actually, on the screen, it would convert the French yes. into English on the screen. Now, I don't know how well it works and how many languages it can do, but that was kind of a cool thing as well.
Yes, that was the first time I saw that kind of technology. I know exactly what you're talking about, because I saw it too. Mm-hmm. It converts the image. I mean, it uses the same color, the same font. It's just strange. I just don't know how it does it. My brain cannot even wrap around the engineering that it would take to design that kind of software. It's fascinating to borrow a
right. phrase. It is amazing, and I've been watching a lot of Enterprise the past couple of weeks, and one thing I love about Enterprise is how you get to actually watch the development of the Universal Translator, mm-hmm. and you get to watch Hoshi actually dissect languages, and there's a lot of dialogue in Enterprise that is in alien languages, and there aren't even any subtitles. They're just going on and on in alien languages. Mm-hmm. And I think it's effective because it shows you what it might feel like if you were part of the crew and you can't understand this and the Universal Translator isn't really developed yet like it is in TNG. It's really cool. But then you see things like being here and with this Klingon, especially because it being a Star Trek language, and you can see that we're like on this path towards a Universal Translator of some kind.
I think this helps prove that our technology will always advance, it'll always go further, and it will always involve Star Trek in some way.
It will always involve Star Trek,
That's just how it is. I mean, even if we don't have a movie for a decade or a TV show for three, it doesn't matter, because people will always be influenced by the technology in Star Trek. And I mean, it's why we have so many common household devices today. And that's not going to be forgotten. And this is just another way of showing it. And it'll help me bridge the gap between my friendships with other Klingon individuals. So I'm really looking forward to this app.
Exactly. It makes me wonder that, okay, of course, Mark Okrand created the Klingon language. And because he's a linguist, he actually did make it, he structured it as a real language. And new vocabulary can be introduced, and it has a proper syntax system. Mm-hmm. And then the Klingon Language Institute came along. And at first, you know, translating things into Klingon seemed kind of like a geeky fan thing to do, and they would just do like one little book or something. But now with the Klingon Language Institute and all the literature that's been translated, and now a feature like this in Being, it makes me wonder if Klingon is someday going to become a language that people might actually use on a limited scale, at least like Esperanto was. It's like an artificial language that comes into actual usage.
Yes, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because the name was completely escaping me. I was just about to say, well, I mean, I feel like more people can speak Klingon than they can Esperanto. I mean, even William Shatner.
Today, probably.
Yeah, today. Yeah. I mean, even William Shatner created a movie that was entirely in Esperanto.
Well, actually, William Shatner, he auditioned for that movie. The director did not tell him that the entire movie was in Esperanto.
That's right.
That's what he says in his memoir.
That's right.
And then he got on the set, and it's like, this entire thing is in Esperanto, but he did it anyway.
So great. Like, they thought that they had such a niche market. They're like, there's only so many people out there, but if everyone buys, you know, a copy,
right,
we're going to be rich.
I don't think it quite went the way they intended.
Not so much.
Anyway, so this is a cool feature, and again, it is part of this collaboration between Microsoft and Paramount. And there is a quote in the press release from Craig Bailenson, who's the director of communications for Being, and he told the LA Times that we have people who understand the deep science of linguistics, and we also have people who are passionate about the Star Trek franchise, and this was a labor of love from a lot of different avenues. And it is like you said a moment ago, Tristan, like our technology will always involve Star Trek mm-hmm. in some way, because the engineers and the scientists and everyone who develop our technology, Star Trek is so much a part of their lives that they can't help but be inspired, and their work can't help but be influenced by Star Trek.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to the future, as always.
Yeah, most definitely. So go check that out. You can use it in the web browser, and if you have a Windows phone, you can actually speak to it, as we were talking about. And I would assume with the Klingon Language Institute involved, maybe there is spoken Klingon that will come back to you. I haven't tested it, but there's a good chance that there is.
Absolutely.
So, okay, so Tristan, I just mentioned that I've been watching a lot of Enterprise over the past week or two. And I've gone all the way through the entire Enterprise Season 1 Blu-ray set, which is fantastic. It looks beautiful and has fantastic features. And I've been waiting for Enterprise Season 2 to come out, and I still haven't seen it on Amazon US yet for pre-order. But I was at TrekCore yesterday, and they threw up a new article. Finally, it's available for pre-order on Amazon UK, but tell everyone what the best part of this news is.
Well, the absolute best part. Okay, I missed the introductory price of season one, and it's now $75. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to wait until season two comes out so this season one gets a little bit lower. And season two in the UK store is just about £25. That's for those of us in America who don't really know how many, you know, dollars that would translate into, it's $38 American. That is a phenomenal price for a season like this. And now, granted, since it's not available in the US store yet, we don't know if that price is going to translate, but this is a good sign that we're going to get it for almost half as much as season one was introduced.
I definitely hope so, because the list price on these Enterprise sets is $119. Oh, they're $10 less than the TNG sets. And I think the lowest price for Enterprise Season 1 was around $64, maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
I think when I pre-ordered it, it was like 94, but Amazon will always give you the lowest price prior to shipping. Mm-hmm. So even if you pre-order it at 119, if it comes down to 64, they're going to only charge you 64. And but I hope that they have it for $35-$38 in the US store, because the sets are really great, and the extra features on the Enterprise sets, if you're a Star Trek fan and you just want to hear the background behind, whether you like the series or not, if you want to hear the background about the development of the series and what was going on at the studio with the franchise and all this stuff, fantastic interviews with Rick Berman and Brandon Braga and the rest of the cast. I have really, really been very, very happy with my purchase of season one.
I am very jealous of you, because lately I've been rebudgeting my entertainment expenses, and I basically have cut them in half. And so I wasn't able to get season three of TNG on Blu-ray, and I wasn't able to get season one of Enterprise on Blu-ray. And I am just crawling in my own skin as a Star Trek fan, because I don't have any Star Trek on DVD except for the fan collections, because I'm such a resolution nut. Like, I'm a video editor, and I love the Blu-ray format. I love high definition, and I knew that someday all this stuff would come out remastered or in its original format. And so I never bought a single season of Star Trek on DVD, because I was waiting for this moment. And now that the moment has come, and I was just like, I can't afford it because it's so expensive, I need to wait for it to go on sale, I might just break my rule for season two if it is that cheap. Like, that is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, if it's that cheap, you should grab it, because it's probably a very special limited time deal.
Absolutely.
And you probably won't get it for that price at any point in the next couple of years anyway.
I'm hoping that when it comes out at that price, if it does in the US store, that means that season one will go down as well and kind of match that price. Now, that would be truly amazing. Now, I'm not betting on it, but I'm just saying that would be a key opportunity.
Could be. You never know. So, and keep your eyes open for the TNG stuff too, because the price fluctuates a lot on that stuff.
I've noticed that. Keep your
eyes open. And TrekCore does a really good job of keeping everyone updated about the price fluctuations. So if you keep your eye on TrekCore.com, if the price does drop to, you know, like $48, they're going to throw some headline up there right away. And you can hop over and get that. So anyway, those of you in the UK, go over to Amazon right now and pre-order Enterprise Season 2 on Blu-ray, because that's £25. You're not going to get it any cheaper than that ever, I suspect. Okay, Tristan, let's move on. And in the other side of the room...
The other side of the room.
We were talking about this cool new card battle game for iOS that has come out. And I just downloaded it last night when I found out about it, and then you said, oh, I love this game. I've been playing this a lot. So why don't you tell everyone about this new game called Star Trek Rivals?
Well, it's exactly how it is in the description. I mean, they do a great job of talking about it, where it's a digital card game, and it has four numbers on the card, one on the top, one on the bottom, one on the left, one on the right. And what you do is you place it in a field of nine squares, and... You like if you place a card down in the center and somebody places directly to the right and his or her number is larger than yours, then that person essentially owns that card until you can take over the card that took over you. And so it's like it says, it's highly addictive, and it's easy to understand but hard to master. And there's a lot of problems with the game, I should say. They have a lot of connectivity issues. They have a lot of bugs. It crashes kind of a bit. But the thing is, the gameplay itself is so solid and so much fun and so interactive too. Like, you can, like, I posted my friend code on Twitter, and like 10 people used it to become my quote unquote friend on the game, and I get to battle them. And also, because they use my friend code, I gain points whenever they level up, because I recruited them to the game. And
so you're kind of like Pike. You told them that.
Yes.
You told them your father played Star Trek Rivals for 12 minutes. I dare you to do better.
I dare you to do better. I'm totally stealing that. I'm going to use that as a recruitment message on Twitter. Yes, it's but yeah, I think you get, there's an option. There's 172 cards or something to that effect. 127 or 172, something like that. And you gain cards whenever you level up or whenever your friends level up. And it's some cards are better than others, obviously. But like a triple is like a 1 or a 2 on every side. But then you could get Pike, who has like a 7 and a 5 on either side. And you can also, of course, buy more cards with real money. Or when you gain enough points, you can just trade in points for more cards. But it's, of course, easier to buy them than it is to gain points for them. But it's fun. It's addicting. The only problem is that if you run out of cards, you can't play any more games until, like, say if you have 10 games going on and you run out of cards and 10 more people want to play with you, you can't play those people until you're done with those previous games. That's kind of annoying.
I see. So it's like you have one deck of cards that you have to use
yes.
for all the games you're playing. You don't have one deck, and that deck duplicates itself for every game
Correct.
That you're playing.
That is, I'm glad that you noticed that and brought that up, because that is an important distinction for players who want to play this game, is that you have one deck. If you use that card in a game with Sally, you cannot use that card with a game with Timmy. It's just how it is. So it's like you have a real deck in hand, but except it's in digital format.
Yeah, I see. So I guess that's how they kind of get you with these in-app purchases, though, because I was looking, you know, most apps these days have in-app purchases, but they're usually things like, let me think in dollars for a minute here, like 99 cents for this or $1.99 for that. Mm-hmm. But in this game, they're like $4.99 for a Latinum slip and $9.99 for a Latinum bar and $24.99 for a Latinum brick.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to know how much a Latinum slab cost. I mean, we're talking here like $99 or something. And I don't know what you do with those, but I assume you can use them to buy more cards.
Yes, that is what it's for. Like those bars translate into in-game points, and those points translate into cadet level cards, lieutenant level cards, commander level cards, admiral level cards, that kind of thing. And you always get 5 cards with every purchase, but the higher the rank card level that you purchase, you have a better chance of getting what they call elite cards. So it's very old style game and in-app purchase techniques, but with a Star Trek twist. And I've had a few friends who have already spent a lot of money on it, because it's you want to. Like, you're like, no, I need these cards. I need to play again. I need to buy these valueless cards.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it, though, like a game like Pokemon, where you play with physical cards, mm-hmm. you would have no hesitation to go out and buy different decks of Pokemon cards for $5 or $10 a deck.
Yep.
So it's basically just like that, except you don't actually get anything physical here.
And you used to get a lot more Pokemon cards for your bucks than this one.
I guess so, yeah. That's right. All right, but this looks like fun. So
it is a lot of fun.
I mean, I'll tell people now, I mean, my ID in the game is the same as my username on all the social media, which is C. Brian Jones.
And if you want to add me, my friend code is LITUDK. So hit me up.
It's one of those applications that runs on both iPad and iPhone. So you download it once and you can play it on either device. All right. Well, let's move on. We have one quick little note here. For those of you who enjoyed William Shatner's The Captains on Epics back in 2011, guys, it's already been 2 years almost since that came out.
Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
I was thinking it was last year. Wow. All right. Well, the Shat is doing a new thing for Epics. He has a mini-series that spins off The Captains, and he's going to be, of course, talking to the actual Captains like he did in the past, but he's also going to be talking to a lot of other Star Trek alumni on this 30-minute show.
Now, do we know, is this new material? I know it's material we've never seen before, but is it from a new shoot? Is it all the like extra footage that we never saw, that like the unused Captains footage?
Right. I don't know. When it comes to people like Kate Mulgrew or Avery Brooks or Scott Bakula or Patrick Stewart, and let's don't forget Chris Pine, I don't know if it's... because that was my first thought as well. Yeah. It was like, is this stuff that you didn't use in the special? But so I don't know with regard to them. But in addition to them, he's going to be interviewing Walter Koenig, Jonathan Frakes, Rick Berman, Brian Braga, Ira Stephen Bear, Ronald D. Moore, Robert Beltran, which, you know, he doesn't do very many interviews.
I know, I'm excited. Like, if anything, just for Robert Beltran, because I want to know how he feels or what he's doing and everything like that. I find him fascinating.
I don't think he didn't enjoy his time on Voyager very much, but it will be interesting to see what he says. Also, Terry Farrell, Michael Dorn, Nana Visitor, and Renee Abergenoy. So with all of those people, I would assume there's probably new stuff being shot. This is like an actual sit-down, half an hour, ongoing miniseries that's called Captain's Close-Up that is going to be running on Epix. It actually premiered last week on May 16th. Mm. And I don't know how long it's going to be going. I don't have access to Epix personally. But you can certainly check epixhd.com and find out a bit more about the listings. And they have a 14-day free trial of Epix if you need to access it through the web. Is it possible to get Epix on television in the States, Tristan? Or is it only a web thing?
Well, that I'm not quite sure because I've only accessed it through the web. I know that they're really good with free trials. And sometimes, like, you know, they don't really care if you use multiple logins to do an extra free trial. They really just want to get their information out there. I think you can get a subscription to it, but it's one of those subscriptions that you have to have, like, everything that you could possibly get from your cable company in order to get Epix.
Okay.
But I know it's readily available through, like, Xbox and PlayStation and, like, Roku devices and things like that. It's, you know, it's out there, but it's actually easier to get it with web-based devices than it is with cable-based television.
So it's one of these networks that I think is it's what we're going to see as TV networks in the future. It's part of that transition away from the traditional model.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. This is one of those things where people mock at the beginning because nobody cares and nobody's on it, but everyone will be following their model in a couple of years.
Yeah, it seems that way. Well, I have to say, I'm interested in seeing this, and I have a feeling that, unlike the Captain's documentary, I have a feeling that this stuff is probably not going to be released on DVD, you know, as a miniseries. So I might have to pull a couple of my little IP masking tricks so that I can access this from Japan and
as you should
watch it. So
I don't.
Yeah. All right, we'll put links.
Enough with this restriction. This is BS.
It's ridiculous. Goodness gracious. It's just crazy. So anyway, I'll rant about that on another show. So for now, we'll put a link in the show notes to this if you want to check it out. Now, Tristan, let's take a break from news for just a moment and tell everyone about our sponsor, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is the fastest and easiest way to create a personal blog, a website, portfolio, or you can even do an online store using the Squarespace Commerce feature, which allows you to set up and sell, you know, any of your crafts or any products if you're a bigger business in just a matter of minutes. And it uses the service known as Stripe. But, you know, just if you want to set up a place to show your writing or your artwork, a personal blog, Squarespace is a very easy way to build a site quickly. It's 100% drag and drop. Yes. And it uses something they call Layout Engine that allows you to build pages with blocks. And this is a really cool feature. You start out on your page, you click a little plus sign, and you're presented with many, many different types of blocks for content, whether it's video, audio, text block, image, gallery, you can embed scripts, whatever you want to do, you just drag that down on the page, and you can actually create columns. Something that it traditionally has been hard to do unless you really know how to write CSS very well.
Yeah.
You can just do it by just put it wherever you want it. And it'll ask you, it doesn't exactly ask you, it actually shows you on the screen, you know, like row, insert, column. And when you see the one you want, you just let go of it and you're done. And you can very, very quickly build any type of site or blog that you want to do. And putting, I mentioned the commerce feature, you know, putting products in is very simple. You just drag an item block down and you just drop it in. And if you have an Amazon affiliate account and you want to sell Amazon products on your site, the Amazon block is very cool because let's say it's a book. You drag it down, you just type in the name of the book, it goes and it finds it on Amazon, it automatically inserts your affiliate ID, and it also automatically pulls the artwork for the book cover for you and makes that clickable as well. So it's like no effort on your part.
Yeah, I made my own website and I used a service that was quote unquote drag and drop, but I wish I used Squarespace because this company that I was with, I basically had to learn HTML coding in order to get specific things done.
In order to do it.
Yeah, but Squarespace is like when they say it's drag and drop, it really is drag and drop. And one thing that this other service that I subscribe to said, they're like, oh yeah, you can have a mobile website with, you know, a mobile version of your website, but all it did was give me the option to make a mobile website with my own. They're like, it was, I had to redesign everything to make a mobile version. With Squarespace, you don't have to do that. It's intuitive. It has responsive design. It will take your website and format it for whatever kind of mobile device that the person's on, whether it's the iPhone, iPad, or a Windows, or Android, it doesn't matter. It will formulate it for that specific space and that specific aspect ratio or window. It truly is amazing. And one feature that I always thought would be standard on these kind of websites is sharing through social media, but it's really not. There's so many websites out there that are lacking in this, but Squarespace is not one of them. It's fantastic. I mean, you can share pages on Facebook, it'll auto-publish to Twitter. And not only that, but you can add buttons to connect to services like Facebook and Twitter, but it doesn't stop there. It has Google+, Instagram, Foursquare, Dropbox, which is a personal favorite of mine, LinkedIn, which is important to me too, because I use it not just for personal items, but for business, and Pinterest, if that's your thing, and more. You know, it's fantastic. I really do like this product.
Right. Yeah. The social media, a lot of people think, well, every website has social media sharing because you always see the buttons, right? Like share, mm-hmm. and then you can click through. But like the Facebook one that you mentioned, it's very interesting. They actually have it integrated with Facebook. So like if you have a brand page like we do for Trek FM and you go and below your Facebook timeline banner, there are boxes, you know, that show you like your recent photos and such, and you can add boxes. You can actually go there and you can add a box and you can choose from there to share a page from your Squarespace website on your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And then you just tell it which page you want it to share and it'll just pull that right over. So it's a step beyond what you normally think of as simple sharing.
Absolutely.
Well, I mentioned the commerce feature at the beginning, and the way the commerce feature works is that they have a deal with Stripe, and that allows you to process credit cards very easily. You don't have to jump through all those hoops of setting up a merchant account like you've had to traditionally do when you set up stores. Squarespace, they don't take any fees from you on the items that you purchase. Of course, Stripe does have processing fees, as you would expect, but they're very low. And using the system, you can have a store up and running in just a matter of minutes, literally. And it allows you, it automatically calculates taxes for you, even, you know, different taxes in different regions for, you know, the U.S., for example, which has very complex taxes from state to state and even within states.
It's ridiculous.
And I would never want to deal with that myself. Absolutely not. You can also process shipping through there. You can do coupons if you want to have discounts on certain products at certain times for your customers. And you can sell both physical and digital goods. So anything you want to sell through there, it's very, very simple. Probably the easiest way I've ever seen to set up an online store. So, you know, whether you're a large business and you have lots of products you want to sell, or whether you're an individual and, you know, you do crafts or you do artwork. Maybe, you know, you make Star Trek figures that you want to sell. A great way for you to set up your store and sell those very easily. And so we'd love for you to try it free for 14 days. You can have access to every feature of Squarespace during that time period. They don't even ask you for a credit card. You just go, you put in an email address and your name. They use that to create your site. And then for 14 days, you can build anything you want. And you can even import your site from tools like WordPress or Blogger and many other platforms. You can see what your site would look like on Squarespace. Then you can use the fantastic tools to tweak it, modify it, and make it your own. And then at the end of 14 days, if you sign up, you can use offer code TREK5 to get 10% off your new purchase on new accounts. Lifetime purchase, in fact, 10% off. The pricing is fantastic. It starts at $8. You really won't find anything cheaper.
You really won't.
Especially not at this quality level. I mean, it's not only is it CMS, it's also hosting. They have unlimited packages. It's I've been using Squarespace for 5 or 6 years at least now. I use it for many websites, both personal and business. Trek FM is built there as well. And I promise you that you're going to love Squarespace. So go try it, squarespace.com/trek. Use offer code TREK5 to save 10%. And you'll be supporting our sponsor and helping us bring this programming to you every week.
Absolutely. And speaking of low numbers, as in the cost of Squarespace, I feel like there might be some low numbers involved in other aspects of Star Trek right now as well.
Yeah, you wouldn't happen to be talking about the box office of Star Trek Into Darkness, which seems to be declining a little bit following the Wednesday premiere, would you?
Well, I am. It didn't start as strong as 2009, but I mean, it's performing better in some countries. I mean, sometimes five times fold better in other countries than it did in 2009. And also, I feel like there has to have been some confusion with the dates, because there were some fan screenings on the 15th in the US.
Yeah.
And then they said it was going to be the 17th, but then they said it was going to be the 18th, but then it became the 17th or something. And I feel like people were just confused. And so now they're waiting.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, of course, to be fair, the movie is making very good money as movies go.
Yes.
I think people are looking, you know, one primary source where I got a lot of information is Variety. And I think they're, of course, comparing it to the 2009 movie. And domestically in the U.S., it had earned $13.5 million through Thursday. So that's the early screening on Wednesday. And I guess it says through Thursday, so I think that they're including the Thursday opening night there, because then they say on Friday it pulled in $22 million. And they were projecting, after the Wednesday premiere, a total weekend gross of $85 million. But after the Friday take, they downgraded that to $65 million, because I think they were expecting more people to turn out on Friday night, you know, being the kind of the traditional first night you would go to a movie during the week. And in that respect, it's trailing the 2009 film, which opened with $79.2 million. But like you said, Tristan, I think ultimately, well, I know ultimately that Into Darkness is going to make an enormous amount of money for the studio. And I think ultimately it's probably going to gross more than 2009, because like you said, internationally, it's doing really well. Yes. It's doing far, far better than 2009 did. And so when all is said and done, it's probably going to be the first Star Trek movie ever, I believe, to truly pull in a very, very large international box office.
And I think, I don't know how, but I think that they knew that was going to happen. I really do, because they pretty much, except for Tokyo, of course, but they premiered it everywhere else in the world and then landed right in the U.S. last, or almost last. I apologize, Chris, but somehow I think they thought that this was going to happen, that this was going to be a game changer for Star Trek, or at least maybe not be the best Star Trek, but be internationally be more accepted, accepting of the franchise, and not just in Germany, but in everywhere else. And it's just really interesting to see these numbers fluctuate and change drastically different from 2009 internationally.
Right. Well, I think the casting, part of the casting was designed to drum up more international interest. Mm. I just feel that way myself. I always felt that way. Altogether, the numbers are 56% higher than 2009 on the opening weekend
And they brought in 5.5 million in Australia, 7.6 million in Germany, 13.3 million in the UK, and 3 million in Mexico, which they say is 250% higher
That's
than
just
the 2009
insane.
Film.
I have no idea. I don't know what the what kind of difference they did in marketing for Mexico, but that is just an insane number. Now, 3 million may not sound like very much, but when you have that percentage of difference, that's just crazy. That's just crazy.
The marketing is very different for this movie. I think one thing that may have made a difference is the fact that if you look at the posters, you really don't know that it's a Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
Most of the posters look like generic action movie posters.
Very generic.
Whereas the posters for 2009 actually were Star Trek posters. You know, they had the insignia and such on them. And they had the Enterprise a bit more prominently, I believe, in some of the posters. So I think that makes a difference. But anyway, it's interesting to see. It's too early to tell what's happening with the box office. You know, reviews. I'm seeing everything from, bravo, Mr. Abrams, bravo. I love the movie. I've seen it 8 times already.
Yeah.
To the other end, where if you like anything about Into Darkness, you can no longer be my friend. So those are the extremes that I'm seeing in reaction to the film.
I know that we're going to get some of that in the feature. It's I know that's going to happen, where like people are going to walk away not liking each other. I know that's going to happen.
I think it is. And speaking of that, Tristan, it's time. It's time for me to turn the show over to you, because as you were just mentioning, not Japan in these international numbers. I still have 3 months to go before the movie opens in Japan.
I don't know how you're going to do it, man.
I am media, entertainment media in Japan, not through Trek FM, but through another magazine. So I will get into the press screening, but I don't know when that's going to take place. I'm hoping towards the end of June, beginning of July. So best case scenario for me, I've still probably got 6 weeks to go before I see this movie.
Okay.
And therefore, I will not be participating in the feature today. I'm now going to turn the show over to international sex symbol Tristan Riddell. And he's going to pull together more of our Trek FM family to discuss Star Trek Into Darkness.
Let's get this done. And this is To the Journey!
To the Journey!
Wait, no.
Wait. To the Ready Room!
I mean, yes! To the Ready Room!
The Ready Room!
Woo!
Oh, I am, ladies and gentlemen listening at home, I am so sorry for that social faux pas. It's just, I get into this zone when I podcast, because I got my two favorite lovely podcasting ladies with me, and that is Lori Sears and Charlene Schmidt.
Hello.
Hi.
And we also have the Matthew Legendary Hands Rushing. And he's
oh yeah,
he's
hi.
Not a native to the Journey, but he is a Trek FM alum. So don't worry, Matt. This is not going to be an exclusive club. Like today, you we're all members of To the Journey.
Well,
today.
I love it, you know, because I listen to your show every week, so I'm a faithful fan.
Awesome.
Oh, well, fantastic. Aww. And all of you who are listening, please, if you're the Ready Room regular, please try To the Journey, because it has us. And
Yay.
So it's fantastic.
Yeah, and we rock.
We do.
Okay. Now, as you guessed, I am not Chris Jones. I'm Tristan Riddell. And that is because our good friend and CEO and leader lives in Tokyo, and he chose to live in Tokyo, and by that logic, he chose not to be able to watch Star Trek Into Darkness until another 3 months. So,
Star Trek Into August.
Star Trek Into August. So he's trying to stay as spoiler-free as possible, and we're helping him out by doing this podcast for him. So, I want to start off by saying, okay, how many times have you seen Star Trek Into Darkness?
Twice so far.
Twice. Lori, how many times for you?
Once.
Matthew, how about you?
Three
times. Okay, so Lori, you're not alone because I've only seen it once. So don't, like, you're not anywhere near less of a fan.
No.
So don't you worry. Now, we're going to have some conflicting opinions in a minute.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm sure that friendships are going to be strained. Friendships are going to be strained.
I might have to fly somewhere and kick somebody's butt. I mean,
it may have to happen. That's just how it is. Because if you notice in all of the reviews, there's no, it was okay movie. It was either like, thank you, Abrams, for blessing us with the greatest Star Trek movie of all time, or I hate you. Never come into my house again. If I see your name on the screen, I'm going to turn off the TV or throw gummy bears at the theater screen.
I think Patton Oswalt wants to go back in time and kill J.J. Abrams with a shovel. He could care less about George Lucas now.
Yeah, it's that may have to happen because his hate is transferred. So, let's start off with kind of like how we do with Through the Journey. Okay, so first impressions, Lori, go.
First impressions, cliche fest 101.
Cliche yeah. fest. Ooh. All right, so that's what you were feeling right when you walked out of the theater. I want feelings that we had when we left the theater.
That's
so
what
cliche
I'm telling
fest.
You. Yeah, I was a little pissed. But anyway. Okay.
Okay, all right. Charlene. Okay. Charlene, you go.
Okay. I definitely had some feelings. I was one of those in the camp that said, JJ, what have you done? But I will say this. My first impression changed a lot from first viewing to second viewing.
Oh. Okay.
I went from kind of the old man, you know, get off of my lawn, JJ, you're playing, get out of there, I hate what you're doing, to, okay, I can accept this and I know where you're coming from now. So I've calmed down a little, I've chilled, but my nerves after that first one, my husband can attest, they were a little frayed, and I was ranting in the theaters, the credits rolled by, trying to explain to him what I was feeling inarticulately, and he's just, what's your problem?
Okay,
it was a
good
movie.
All right, so Matthew, your first impressions walking out of the theater the first time.
First impressions for me were actually really good. I loved this film the first time I saw it, and I loved this film the third time I saw it. So the impression really hasn't changed. It's only just, I think, seeing it three times really solidified what I felt the first time I saw it for me. And I think part of that was, I've been reading the comics, and so it's been helping me get used to the JJ universe and what they've been doing through the comics, and helping me see that anytime that they use something you've seen before in other Trek, that it's their way of paying homage to what came before, but also that this is a different universe. So the moment I split myself into saying, this is not the same universe, I'm okay, because all bets are off. You know, they can do whatever they want, and they can pull bits and pieces from, you know, any of the films, any of the shows, anything that goes, and kind of throw that into a blender and come out with their own interpretation. And I'm okay with that, because that was the point of doing 2009. So yeah, first impression for me was excellent. I thought this film was great.
Okay, well okay. I'm filled with glee right now, because we have some diverse opinions. This is fantastic. We have a guy who absolutely loved it all the way through. We have Char, who didn't like it at first, but then warmed up to it. And then we have Lori, who thought it was like, blah, blah, didn't like it. This is fantastic, because I thought I was going to be alone. And Lori, I'm with you. I had so much nerd rage coming out of the theater. I wanted to punch a puppy is what I wanted to do. I was just so angry. I wanted to destroy something beautiful. And
that's awful, Tristan. How dare you?
Next thing you know, he's going to slap his mama.
You don't have that in your heart, young man.
I know. I wanted to tear my clothes like Pilot and just go, rah, and just wash my hands of it. But
wow.
I calmed down. My wife calmed me down. She's like, it's okay. It's okay. You know, like, you don't have to love everything. But so that was definitely my first impression. Now, I am, like everybody else, I'm going to see it a second time. And I had an argument with a very close friend who loved it. And it was a nice argument, though. And there was no stones throwing or anything like that. And so I'm going to go see it again. And I'm going to be completely open to having my views change like yours, Char. And I'm hoping that my views will change. Now, Lori, are you going to take that same action?
I'm going to try it one more time and give it another shot just to see maybe if I was too harsh to begin with. But, yeah, I'm going to give it another try.
That's okay. I'm glad that you're open as I am, because I had too much hate for one person. So Char, what do you think?
Okay, I think that's actually a really recommended course of action, just based on my experience. The first time I was so enthralled, I guess, with the action sequences. I should also note that I saw it the first time in 3D. The second time I saw it in 2D, and I was able to solidify everything that was going on with the story much more solidly. Maybe because of it being 2D, maybe because it's just the second time around, but I really absorbed a lot more that second time and was able to really process what I wanted to think about this movie a lot more. Instead of just the total fit of rage, I could kind of take a step back and see, okay, what's really going on here? And it helped me understand this movie a lot.
Great.
And I think on the other side, I saw this movie twice in IMAX 3D, and I loved it there more than I did in 2D, because they actually filmed a bunch of the scenes in native IMAX. So a lot of the action scenes would fill up the entire IMAX screen, which made it incredible to be able to see that much action. The Klingon scene was one of them, which was really cool, having more, you know, screen space to see more of what was going on and what they filmed. So I really enjoyed it, and I also thought that the 3D actually looked good, because I've seen some movies recently where I hated the 3D. I thought it didn't add anything. But I felt like, for me, when I saw it in 3D, it added to the dimensionality. And then, of course, seeing it on IMAX, it's huge, and the sound is perfect, and it made it such an experience that it felt like you were part of some of those scenes. So I really enjoyed that part.
Definitely. Like you said, I mean, and also this film was actually the first IMAX film to be converted into 3D. This was the first type of footage that was IMAX to be converted. And I thought they did a fantastic job with the conversion, but everything else that wasn't in IMAX was completely flat with the 3D. Like, especially the scenes like with the brig was just very, very flat, very just dull and drab by comparison to the Klingon homeworld and also the homeworld at the beginning. But it didn't actually fill the entire screen. Sadly, the IMAX footage was cropped to not be the full IMAX ratio. I was very disappointed, because I paid extra to go to a real IMAX, not a LIMAX, as it's called. But yet, JJ, for some reason, did not release a full print of the IMAX footage. And I'm a little disappointed. It was like kicking a man when he's down. You know, like, not only do I not like your movie, but yet you deprived me of seeing all of the footage. But maybe I should thank you. But Char, what were you going to say?
I was going to note that I did not see the IMAX version. I saw the LIMAX, as you put it, edition.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that makes a difference.
Maybe. I mean, when you compare real IMAX to LIMAX, there's a huge, huge difference.
There really
is. Literally and figuratively, as Matt can attest to. But I mean, there's so many nerds out there like myself who is just like shudder at the idea of digital IMAX.
So I wanna ask, okay, Tristan and Lori, what is it that you hate about this movie so much? Like, when you walk out of it, I guess I can't understand why you're so angry. So tell me why you're angry.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because we need to get into specifics, and I wanted to get through generalities at first, like how we're feeling, why we're feeling. But this time, let's get some bullet points. And so, Lori, how about you go first? Let's just give some bullet points, and let's let Lori finish, because I'm sure it would be easy to go, no, you're wrong. So,
well,
Lori, lay it on us. Just vent. Act like we're your Star Trek therapist.
Okay, so just at the get-go, when they started mentioning the Prime Directive, I started saying, okay, was there even a Prime Directive at that point? That kind of pissed me off. Then, when they got to, I'm trying to remember which, I'll probably get it all out of order, but Just the fact that they threw Klingons in there just for the sake of throwing Klingons in there, that's what it felt like to me. I mean, he can make them look any way he wants to make them look. He's the movie maker. He can stick, he can make them green. It didn't matter to me, but it was just like, oh, Klingons, that's familiar. Let's throw that in there. It was like making a big soup, and let's just throw more and more and more in there. And, I mean, I get all the cliches. I get that you're paying homage to the older movies and, you know, whatever. But it just seemed like the story didn't fit together really well. And the action sequences kind of held it together. But the story just was like driving down a road full of potholes. I don't know. That's just how I felt.
I think you, yeah, no, I mean, and Matt, to answer your question on my view, I mean, Laurie, I'd have to agree with you on most of that. Now, there was a Prime Directive in the 23rd century, but it was really only mentioned, I think, once in TOS. And if I recall, it was in The Return of the Archons. But it wasn't really like hardcore mentioned or played out until we got to TNG. So it, to be fair to JJ, it did exist, but it wasn't as prevalent as it is in, as it was in the 80s. I felt like I actually loved the Klingons. I mean, I thought they looked great. I thought I liked the jewelry was cool on the ridges. I mean, I like, why hasn't that been done before? And I think the Klingons were introduced because I really do feel like this is going to be a lead up to the Klingon War. Mm-hmm. I feel like the third movie is going to be a Klingon War model, but this is just speculation, of course. I mean, there's no way of knowing I'm right, but to talk about why I didn't like the movie, I thought the script was horrible. I thought it was horribly acted, and I thought it was horribly written. I really do. It's I felt like I understand that this is the JJ universe and that people are different, but I did not recognize these people. I did not recognize these characters, even from the 2009 version, a movie which I loved. I am not one of those mindless drones who called J.J. Abrams Jar Jar Abrams. I can't stand that. I just absolutely can't stand that. I love J.J. and I love what he's done to the franchise, but I thought it was, not only did I didn't think it was a good Star Trek movie, I didn't think it was a good Star Wars movie, and I didn't think it was a good sci-fi movie. So that's my piece on that.
All right, I've got a question for you, Tristan. You mentioned actors not being a good acted story. Who did you think fell through?
I thought Chris Pine was probably the worst, acting-wise. Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. I felt like he was a brat who needed to be slapped around, and he acted that way. And now I understand that it's all about growth. I understand that he was a spoiled child at the beginning. He was given the captaincy too early, and the writers recognized that. That's why we had that arc at the end where he's like, no, the chair is important. Please just kill me. I understand that. But I felt like he was swallowing his words, he was temperamental, and he was not the Kirk that we saw in 2009. And I thought Zachary Quinto did okay, but his character was just dashed. I don't know who that was, but it wasn't Spock.
Huh. Okay, I find that interesting. I completely disagree with you.
Yeah, me too.
That's cool. I want people to disagree with me because I want people to love this film. I want people to like it and love it and see it multiple times because any form of Star Trek is good. This is just my opinion.
Yeah, I think the thing that I loved about specifically Chris Pine is this is a Kirk story. The whole movie is about Kirk and earning that chair, you know, and his interaction, I thought, especially when Pike dies, was fantastic. He acted his heart out in that scene. It was amazing. He was giving Tom Paris a run for his money in Threshold. he looked
nice reference.
Yeah, for my To the Journey fans, and I thought that he was excellent at the beginning. That cockiness, because he has to come off as an ass, and especially since he's grown a little bit in the sense that he tells Pike, I haven't lost anybody under my command since I've had the Enterprise. So he feels vindicated for being like this. And he needs to get knocked down a few notches in this movie to become, I think, by the end of this movie, the person that Pike always believed he could be. And it's that storyline, I think, that makes this movie work, because it's all about Kirk turning into the Kirk that we kind of know in love later on. And I think by the end of this film, he's really that character. And I think Pine was fantastic. And on Quinto, I was never the biggest Quinto fan. Even in, he's fine to me. So Tristan, I'm with you. he in the sense that he doesn't really do anything for me as Spock. I think he's serviceable. He there's no problem with him. I don't mind him, but I don't love him either. For me, it's Bones that I love the most. And unfortunately, McCoy has very little to do in this movie. But what he does have to do, I was laughing hysterically at, because you know, Carl Urban is just spot on as Bones.
Yeah, he did do a great job. But Char, what are you thinking about this?
You know, I didn't think Zachary Quinto was that bad. He's playing a very different Spock. He's playing a very emotionally devastated Spock. I mean, think about all that the poor guy has gone through. He loses his mother. He loses his home planet. Throughout the course of this movie, he loses Pike. He loses Kirk. I mean, the poor guy just gets thrown through the ringer. So I'm not faulting Zachary Quinto on that at all. I think he's doing it appropriately. I think Chris Pine did exactly what he needed to do for the arc of this story. I would say if there's any, I guess, strange deviation of acting, I would say maybe Zoe Saldana as Uhura is a very different character. She's kind of made her own. I don't disagree with how she's portrayed her. It's just she's taken her in a different direction. I think she has the right to do that with this being a different universe. Everybody else? Okay. I definitely think Carl Urban is underrated as Bones. Yeah. The rest kind of fall to the background, although I think Scotty got some good one-liners, too.
Excellent, yeah.
Lori, what do you think?
I was going to say, and I'm sorry, I have to disagree. I thought Carl Urban was super over the top this time, but, you know, whatever. But Scotty, what's his name? Simon Pegg. He did a great job.
Simon Pegg, yeah.
He made the movie for me. Yeah. That was hilarious. Excellent. He was so funny.
It's funny that you mentioned Carl Urban, because I was thinking that while I was watching it. Now, there are some great times when Bones himself, as in like DeForest Kelly, was over the top. And so I agree with you. I mean, when you compare Into Darkness Bones with 09 Bones, yes, it's very over the top. But I think sometimes it was okay used. And Char, I'm glad you brought up Saldana, because I feel like that was more of the writer's fault than the Zaldana's fault, because she just added to the atmosphere of a fraternity on the Enterprise. This was not a professional ship. This was not any kind of command structure whatsoever. This was guys and girls at a frat house, and they made, like, they had such an amazing scene with Zaldana on the Klingon homeworld, where she's like, no, I Captain, I'm not going to let you come out with guns blazing. I'm going to defuse this, because this is what I'm going to do, and this is what I was trained to do. And let's just forget that the first Uhura didn't speak Klingon, but whatever. And
it's all right. She kicks ass in this scene.
Exactly. And she had an amazing scene where she stood toe to toe with a Klingon, and it was awesome. But then every other scene, she was a high schooler who got pissed off at her boyfriend. And it just broke my heart, because it was just like, even how Kirk talked to Scotty was like, he was just like, ah, Scotty, come on. Oh, whatever. Okay, it's cool. Whatever. And then he walks off screen.
This
was not a command structure. This was not a Starfleet ship. Mm-hmm. And that just added to my disgruntledness. I know that people are going to say, no, they're growing into their characters. It's before the 5-year mission. But meh. Matt, what are you
saying? It's Animal House in space.
It's Animal House in space, except for with no panty raids, except for Alice Eve.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good one. I really liked. I think one of my favorite scenes was the scene with Pine and Zaldana in the turbo lift, because I liked that with the interaction between those two characters, that Kirk respects her as a person, and he even respects the relationship between her and Spock when he says, "I'm sorry, that was inappropriate." He's realizing that there's a line that he has with his crew. And I thought that was a small moment of, like, just kind of growth. And then, of course, when he's like, you two are fighting? Oh, what is that even like? Every time I see that scene, it just cracks me up because the way he delivers that line is perfect.
And then we immediately see him as they open the turbo lift.
Exactly.
You're right. That was a great moment.
But I really think that one of the things that they're doing in this movie is that they are having to skew this for a younger audience, because the idea is to get fans that are younger. And you can't do that if you have characters that act like Shatner and DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy, who are all in their 50s by the time that, you know, the films start, you know, and they're well into their 60s and 70s by the time the films end. And so they're trying to create that feel, and I'm okay with that because, you know, I'd rather this universe that they're creating, which is especially with the comics, and I see what they could do with a TV show and all sorts of awesome things with this universe. It's really rich.
And Char, do you have something to add to that? And then Lori.
Yeah, I do. I'm really glad that you brought up that this is made for a younger audience. I feel like this is geared toward a generation that has probably not seen any other Star Trek before. This is their gateway. And we saw that happen with Star Trek 09. I think this is just as good of a movie, if not better, for that purpose. To bring in someone who has no knowledge of who Khan is or what's happened in the previous movies, what Kirk and Spock and McCoy are really all about, they see this first. And so they idolize this first. These are their iconic moments for their minds. Then they go back and they see nearly 50 years of what we already know. And if that is the case, if that's what these movies are here to do, so be it. That's what I realized the second time I saw this film, is it wasn't geared towards someone necessarily like me, who has seen Star Trek II and seen all these other things happen in the other movies. Because I would argue it takes things from 2, 3, and 4. And I can explain that in a minute if you like.
Yeah, and honestly, 6 too, actually.
A little bit of 6, yes. So we've seen this happen before, and my biggest gripe, my knee-jerk reaction was, show me something different. I've already seen this before. But it's not for me. It's for them. And so I felt kind of like the old guy, get off my lawn. But then I realized he's not on my lawn. He's across the street creating a different playground for other kids. That's okay. I can accept that.
Lori, how about you?
Wow, that was really profound. But I like it.
But this is why you're wrong.
No, I'm kidding. I wasn't going to say this is why you're wrong. No, that's what I liked when you said we're getting to watch these characters grow and see background. That's what I loved about 2009, because we got so much background on the characters that we'd never seen before. And I love that movie for that reason. Now, I didn't feel that with this movie, but it's okay. I understand what you're saying. I've had friends who have seen the movie this weekend and have said, this is what Star Trek is. I really like this. I never knew this. So that's good. I'm glad. And if they go back and watch what we've already seen, that would be wonderful.
And one of the things that I've really, I think, disliked is hearing people say, this movie's just Star Wars with Star Trek as a title. And I don't think that at all. And the reason is because I feel like this is what modern Trek should look like. You know, if they had this much money, this is what, you know, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan could have looked like. They just never gave Star Trek money. They never cared about it before in the way that they are now. And so, you know, before the review that I wrote for the site, I put the quote from Gene Roddenberry talking about that he hoped that one day somebody would come along and do Star Trek bigger and better than it had ever been done before. And we also need to realize that you also have to contextualize Trek for the audience. And the audience of 2009, 2013 is completely different than when we were creating Trek back in the 80s and the 90s, all the things that we hold dear as Star Trek fans. And that's why I think Star Trek fans had a problem with Enterprise, and that's why I think a lot of Star Trek fans have had a problem with 2009 and 2013, because the sensibilities of storytelling and the way that we do that are very different, and the people that they are trying to reach are very different. And so I think that if Roddenberry was alive today, he would love this film, personally, because I think that at its core, it is very Star Trek. It is Star Trek through and through. And why? Because it talks about important issues like the Prime Directive. It's contextual. It's talking about issues that we've been dealing with for the last 15 years, whether it's terrorism, fatherhood, friendship, found families because of the death of the nuclear family. I mean, this is where we are today. And so Trek is talking about these things. And I think that's what makes this a fan-freaking-tastic Star Trek film.
Well, I'm glad that you brought all that stuff up because I believe that, yes, it deals with all those issues. And I feel like Star Trek needs to deal with heavy issues. And I'm glad that this this movie did it. But I do not think that that alone makes it a Star Trek film. I feel like when I watch this, those people who said it's a Star Wars film are just, they're tired, okay? They just don't understand. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and they're nothing alike. Star Trek Into Darkness is nothing like a Star Wars fan. I mean, a Star Wars movie. It's not even close. I mean, you might have had some argument with 2009, absolutely, but not even close with Star Trek Into Darkness. But the thing is, I need more than just casual references that have nothing to pertain to the plot from TOS and TNG to make this a Star Trek film. It was hard for me to stay angry because when I left this movie, I didn't feel like I saw a Star Trek film. I don't feel like I saw a Star Wars film. And I don't even feel like I saw Khan. So I wasn't angry at all at how they used Khan because I'm like, it wasn't Khan. It was Benedict Cumberbatch, a super soldier. So I want to know what you guys think about the use of Khan. Was it too much? Was it too little? Did they use him just right, or did they abuse him? Shar, what do you think?
Okay, I think Benedict Cumberbatch as Khan was an interesting choice. He's an amazing villain. I thought he was brilliantly. He acted brilliantly as the part. He's haunting, manipulative, scary. Exactly what you need him to be. The fact that he is not an Indian guy does kind of make things interesting. And I kind of wonder if after Benicio del Toro, who was originally cast to play Khan, that whole thing fell through. I kind of have to wonder, were JJ and company kind of trying to make a statement about the face of terrorism? That it could be anybody? Because, you know what? We have a stereotype in our heads, guys, whether we want to admit it or not, of what a terrorist looks like. They're halfway around the world from our point of view in North America. They have dark skin. They hate us. And they're going to destroy us at all costs. Well, why not just change a couple things? And why not have it be a pale guy with blue eyes?
That is such an interesting point. I have never thought that before. I have never heard that. And so many people, when you go online and they talk about Khan being that way, like, okay, personally, I don't think it was a good choice, but maybe. I mean, you may be changing my mind on this. But the reason why I didn't like it wasn't because of the race that they chose. But when you go online, people say like, oh, this is BS. This is racism. This is whitewashing. You know, this is horrible. Like, Star Trek is trying to make a statement saying that if you combine all the best genes in the world, like the original Khan, then you're going to get a white guy. And that's what people are complaining about. But just think, if they casted a dark-skinned individual, they're like, oh, yes, thank you, Star Trek, for saying this dark-skinned individual is a terrorist.
Exactly.
Amazing. I am so glad you brought that up.
thank you.
That's great. We're going to write that one down. Now, Lori, what did you think about Khan?
Oh, like you said, he makes... Cumberbatch makes a really good villain. He's real creepy, and he's believable as Khan to a point, but I don't know. He's supposed to have this super strength and, I don't be invincible. He just didn't come off that way to me. I don't know. I just wasn't convinced.
Really? I mean, when Kirk was punching him in the face over and over, that didn't convince you?
He jumps 30 meters out of a starship.
I'll tell you honestly what's sitting there in my brain when I was watching that whole thing is, okay, where's Watson? And when is he going to come out with some neurosis? So, sorry. That's all I kept thinking. I don't know.
I had the opposite of you, Lori. I thought, I was like, he was not Khan. He's just a super soldier. He's just a guy who can take a punch. But, I mean, Matt, I'm dying to know how you felt about Khan.
You can't replace Ricardo Montalban as Khan. You can't erase what he did. You can't try to be who he was. So what you need to do is you need to create your own Khan. And I feel like that's what they did for this film. They created a very different Khan. They created a Khan who's been woken up and then been used. And really, what does he care about? The same things he cared about before, which are taking over the universe and making sure that his family is safe. And I felt like this is the Khan that I kind of wanted to see in The Wrath of Khan. You know, in The Wrath of Khan, I get told that he's really awesome, and I get told that he's really strong, and I get told all of these things, but I never get to see it. This movie...
Look at those pecs!
Yeah, but I mean, that's, I'm just saying, this
so
movie...
interesting
but this movie,
that you say that.
But this movie tells me that, and it shows me that. You know, and it shows me just how smart he is.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt there. Why does it show us how smart he is? All he did was know Starfleet procedure.
No, not only does he know Starfleet procedure, but he's always able throughout the film to be three steps ahead of people. And even when he's captured, he's still three steps ahead of everyone. It's like he's playing three-dimensional chess, but he's already won the game. You just don't know it yet.
I don't see that. All I see is a guy who is aware of the plan before everybody else is. Char, what are you thinking?
I kind of want to take us in a slightly different direction. You mentioned something that really the second time around really impacted me in terms of just how great the theme of terrorism is in this story. The very beginning of the film, it kind of feels soft at first, and then it's pretty easy to figure out what's going to happen with the sick daughter and the father. He sacrifices his life, and Khan manipulates him, basically, to be a pawn in his plan. I think, though, that says a lot about not only what a desperate parent might do to save the life of their child, but it also made me think, okay, the guy is going to save his daughter's life, but what kind of a world is he creating for his daughter to live in? And I think that's kind of the culture that we are living in right now of terrorism that's got just paranoia and fear striped all over it because we just don't know what's going to happen next. When we think it's not going to get any worse, guess what? It does.
Char, I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's, you know, a key theme that it definitely is the saving grace of the film, in my opinion. And some people believe, like, the best part. Now, we have only about 10 minutes left. And
oh, my God.
And I would love to talk about the final, not the final moments, but like the climax of the film. We need to talk about the climax of the film, about when Kirk, quote unquote, dies, when he saves the ship, and when Spock captures Khan, and why he captures Khan alive. I want to hear those people's thoughts on that. And please remember, we only have 10 minutes left. So, Matt, how about you go first?
Well, this is the part of the film I think that actually works the best. So this film gives us Kirk having to lay down his life for everybody else in a way that he's never had to do before. He has to learn that lesson for himself. And I think it was really important for this film for Kirk to have to do that and not be anybody else. It needed to be Kirk for the storyline that they're going to continue to tell, because Kirk wouldn't be who we want him to be in the third film if he doesn't die himself. And so I think that this actually works brilliantly for what they're going for story-wise. And I just really enjoyed that scene. You know, I don't have a problem that Quinto yells Khan, because I also think that works well too. You know, he's just taken away the only person that's truly been his friend in his life. Spock does, and why wouldn't you yell the name of the guy who just killed your best friend, and you have no idea right now that he's going to be able to be brought back to life. You know, I thought that the way they bring Kirk back to life was some fun writing. I mean, I knew he couldn't stay dead, and you knew the minute that Bones was playing with the Tribble earlier that this was going to happen and it was going to be okay.
Yeah,
but nobody else in the story knows that, and that's what's really important for what the characters are going to experience.
All right, Lori, how about you, and then Char?
I'm going to have to kind of agree with you somewhat, Matt. I mean, I like the poignant moment where Kirk has to sacrifice himself for the crew and, you know, to save everybody, to fix the ship. I mean, and I appreciated that moment and how he had to really, you know, become a humble individual and stop thinking about himself to do that. When Zachary Quinto said, "Khan," I have to admit, there was no emotion for me except I started laughing. And I hated that, and I know I wasn't meant to laugh, but there were other people around me laughing too. So that, but I really would have liked if they would have put Kirk in a torpedo and shot him to a planet, and then Carol Marcus would have been the mad scientist.
No.
I'm just kidding. No. I kept waiting for that.
Come on, she's just kidding, Char.
I'm just kidding.
I was going to have to slap you, silly.
No, slap my grandma. Don't slap me.
All right.
I don't know. Char, drop some knowledge.
I'll try here. Okay, this is the scene that I had the biggest freaking problem with the first time I saw it, because, okay, you're ripping off Star Trek 2, 3, and 4 all in the last 20 minutes of this freaking film, okay? We have life, death, and life. Every, like, almost a line-by-line remake of Ship Out of Danger speech with the iconic moment between the glass. And then Kirk comes back to life. That's ripping off from 3. And the ship is damn near destroyed, so that's almost 3 again. But then they rechristen it, and that's an element of 4. And I just thought, you are trying too hard. However, after the second viewing, I can accept everything but that one iconic moment. You know which one I'm talking about. That should have been reserved for William Shatner. Quinto did not need to say that. I don't care if you think that it works, Matt. It doesn't. It's almost embarrassing to hear him scream it. Because you need to leave that alone.
I'll say
this. And they went there.
I'll say one thing, Char. I agree with you in the sense that the line delivery I felt like was horrible. Because I don't feel like Quinto got that kind of guttural sound that you need when you yell "Khan." So I don't have a problem with him saying it. I wish that they had, I don't know, dropped him a few octaves or something. Because it doesn't sound right when it's not being yelled.
It is.
Yeah.
Off.
So.
Yeah. See, it's reserved for Shatner in so many different ways. But okay. So I'll give my quick final thoughts, and then we'll wrap up with some ratings and a brief description of why we gave the rating. Char and Matt, you're both incredibly right about who this was made for. This was made for people who had no idea what Star Trek is. And by that logic alone, I feel like that's why I can argue that it's not really a Star Trek film. But the thing is, you're absolutely right. It's made for a non-Star Trek audience to get people interested in Star Trek, and I think that's exciting. But Star Trek 2009 proved that you can make a film that's for non-Star Trek fans as well as Star Trek fans. And I feel like they should have done that. And with that in mind, you could argue, oh, well, no, that final scene, you can't get much more Star Trek than that final scene. And I agree. But that's an iconic moment that was ripped off. Now, you could say, how could you rip off something when it's a reboot, slash remake, slash sequel? You know, how can you say that? Because there are just some moments that are so sacred that you should not touch them. And one person argued and made kind of a good argument that Shatner didn't really earn that moment of screaming "Khan" because he just marooned him. You know, like, he didn't lose his friend. He was just waiting for Spock to pick him up. That may be true. I can't argue that. But it has burrowed into our lexicon, into our minds, and into our pop culture.
Right.
And it came off as mockery, not as something sentimental.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's the word.
And so that turned me off from the entire scene because of that. And on top of that, what turned me off from the scene is that I knew what was going to happen. Everybody knew what was going to happen. And Matt, you gave the argument that, and I've heard it before, and it's a very good argument, and you made a strong one, that it doesn't matter that we don't know, because all that matters is that Kirk dies and is reborn as a good captain. That's a solid argument, and I think that's what they were going for. But for me personally, how can I invest my own emotions in the drama if I know exactly what's going to happen?
Right.
How can I be conflicted and feel for these characters when I know everything's going to be okay? It's going to be the reset button that we complain about so much on To the Journey. So With that in mind, that is why I personally did not enjoy it. But now I want to go back and I want, Lori, I want you to give us a rating. Give us a 1 out of 5 nacelles. Like 1 to 5 nacelles. 1 being horrible, 5 being great, and give us a brief description of why you chose that.
I'm going to have to say 3 out of 5 nacelles just for the fact that it will get people to go to the theater and watch the movie and hopefully go back and watch what has come before. That's why it gets that rating from
That's
me.
Fantastic reasoning. That's really great. Okay, Matt.
I'm going to give it 4 nacelles. I don't think this film is perfect, and I don't think anybody should hear me say that. There's definitely things that I wasn't the biggest fan of. I liked the new warp core, but I was disappointed that they still have the brewery there. I will say, I think that this movie, and I wrote this in my review, is both compelling and it's contemporary. And that's what Star Trek always was when it was telling stories with its themes. And I'm invested personally in these characters. I like these characters. I like that they're a little bit askew from what I knew before. So it makes me be able to be invested in them because I still don't know, Tristan, what's going to happen to them. Now, they might live by the end of the film, but I still don't know what their final journey is going to be because these characters... Everything's open, you know? I mean, especially the next film. It'll be the last film. They could all die. A few of them could die. Who knows? And stay dead. Because this is a different universe.
Okay, Char. Go ahead and give your reading and a brief description.
Okay, well, I kind of have to go against your rating system here, Tristan, because there is no rating system on the Ready Room. So I'm going to give it 7 communicator beeps because did you notice how many that there were in this film? Communicator beeps. Yeah, just boop, boop, that. And then a tear from each eye because there were a lot of tears in this film. I think this film does have some imperfections. We could spend a whole hour on nitpicky details alone, I think. But I think this is also a film that I'm going to appreciate with each subsequent viewing. And I can't say that about all Trek films. So in that respect, I think it's a job well done. The character growth is definitely something that appeals to me, and I love it. I'd say the only thinly veiled character in this film is Carol Marcus, and I'm hoping it's because we'll see more of her in the third movie so that maybe, not only does her character grow, but her waistline grows, and we have the arrival of David on the way. Or maybe a Dana or a Diana. I mean, this is an alternate universe. It could be a girl, too. Who knows? So, anyway, I think this is a fun film. It's a good ride. I definitely do think that it appeals more to a general audience than Trek fans. But that's where I have my reservations, but I'm accepting that. It's a decent outing overall.
I'm going to have to end on a down note. I give it 1 nacelle out of 5 because... I don't think it was a good Star Trek film. I don't think it was a good Star Wars film. I don't think it was a good sci-fi film. I feel like the action sequences were fantastic, but I can go see The Expendables if I want action. And I felt like it was a murky script that was poorly written, and I feel like there was too many moments that were presented to us that were then taken away. I feel like I would have believed the Kirk arc a little bit more if he wasn't demoted for only 5 minutes of the picture. If Spock wasn't transferred to another ship for only 5 minutes of the picture. I feel like maybe they kind of cheated their audience a little bit. And I feel like I'm glad that you brought up Alice Eve because I wanted to see more of her too. I felt that she was the most thinly veiled because the emotional moments that they were giving us had no backstory and no connection to the audience because why are we supposed to cry if we've barely seen this Admiral before and we've barely seen Alice Eve before, and then why do I care about their father-daughter relationship? But I felt that there was just too many moments in there that were cheating and that were plot holes and that just kind of curtailed what was presented to us at the beginning. But this is just me. I want people to go see it. I want Star Trek fans to go see it. I want non-Star Trek fans to go see it because anything Trek in the theaters or on TV is good for business and good for sci-fi and good for the general population altogether. And so I just want to thank all of you for giving your varied opinions and fighting for them furiously because everybody's right and everybody's wrong. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of Star Trek, and that's the beauty of opinion. And I think that this was great, and so thank you so much for coming on. Matt, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02, and I do book reviews and now movie reviews. I'll be doing the book review of the audiobook of Into Darkness when it comes out next week, so fans will be able to find that once I finally get through that. Alice Eve is reading that, so I'm excited. Exactly. And then, of course, do Literary Treks with Chris, and also do The Orb with Chris, where we talk all things Deep Space Nine. So please join us there.
See, Matt is just all over the place, people. You can hear that sultry voice everywhere you look.
That's right. He is everywhere.
That didn't really make sense because you're using two senses there. But anyway, Shar, where can we find you?
You can find me, of course, with you and Lori on To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Yay! And, of course, all over the place on Trek FM in general, on the website, because I edit things and I've written some stuff. I edit more than write anymore these days, but... oh, well, that's what I'm supposed to do now. And, of course, you can chat me up on Twitter, and my handle is Oath of Profanity.
Lori, where can we find you?
You can also find me on Twitter at LoriS68.
You can also find me on Twitter at TheInsaneRobin. And please, if you follow me there, let me know you're a Star Trek fan, and I will follow you right back. And thank you so much, everybody, for coming in. Please, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Star Trek Into Darkness, why are you listening? Don't listen. This is a spoiler show. And if you have seen it, go see it again. And thank you for listening. This was To the Ready Room. I mean,
To the Ready Room!
To the Ready Room! Phew. Matt, I think that was a really good show. I mean, I'm exhausted. I'm sweaty. I'm temperamental. I'm basically like a baby with colic. I just don't know what's going on.
I'm with you, Tristan. That was a fantastic show. I'm not even feeling that great today. But I had to come on and defend this movie because I loved it. And so it was great getting to talk to you, though, because you made me think about some things that I hadn't thought of before.
Hey, you made me think about some things I hadn't thought of either. And I think Shara's point on the anti-whitewashing of Khan was just phenomenal. It changed my whole perspective on stuff. And I'm going to go see it again because I don't want my rating of one nacelle to stay that way. I want it to go up to 4. I want it to go up to 5. That'll never happen, but I want it to. And because right now in my mind, it's pretty rough. But you helped me change my mind, and hopefully we've helped change some people's minds who are on the fence. And
yeah,
but,
that's great.
But if telling one thing that you shouldn't be on the fence about, and that's definitely about where you should build your own website, and that's at squarespace.com. Now, you should all go to the easiest and best website to build your own website, because it's drag and drop, it's simple, and if you go to squarespace.com/trek and put in the offer code TREK5, you will get a 14-day trial. It's fantastic. You will not feel like you wasted your time, and you don't even have to give a credit card number for the 14-day trial. Matt, I don't know. I feel like after doing this podcast, I need to go see Wrath of Khan. I need to get my Indian/Spanish fix of Khan in order to sleep tonight. So I think I'm going to go do that.
Tristan, that sounds like a fantastic idea. But you know what? I think it's time to stick 2 Cadians in it, because the Ready Room is done.